you live in the middle of nowhere and feel separated from the church?
Yeah, that's me.
Or do you think the church is out of touch?
Absolutely.
Then this podcast is for you. Coming to you from the Diocese of Sioux City.
What? Where the hell is Sioux City?
Welcome to Outcast Catholic with your hosts, Father Shane Demon and Father Travis Crotty.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Outcast Catholic. I'm Father Travis Crotty.
And I'm Father Shane Demon.
Father Shane, I'm waiting pretty anxiously with bated breath over here for something in Sioux City.
What's that?
Well, having some car issues on a new vocations mobile. Mm-hmm. And here's the issue. It's a new car. And it was working well. Just got it the other day. And great weekend with it. Went to leave Briar Cliff after Mass. And I had a perfect little evening in mind, okay? It was... This time of year, it's nice because it's not pitch black when I get out of these masses, and the sun was going down, and it's a beautiful view of Sioux City from the cliff up top. Mm-hmm. It's not a real cliff. It's a big hill. And I walked around, perfect sunset, and I thought, what do I want to eat? And I thought, you know what? I haven't had Jerry's Pizza for a long time. I'm going to order Jerry's Pizza. So I did.
Classic Sioux City staple.
Absolutely. I had 20 minutes to kill before I had to wait on this pizza, and I thought, I'm going to drive and just turn on some tunes, enjoy this beautiful, perfect kind of spring sunset, drive to Stone State Park, have a nice tour around up there. And as I got on the road, my car was going just fine. All of a sudden, the RPMs kept going up, but the car stopped moving. So a few issues, took it in. The reason I'm waiting with anxious breath is it is in the shop presently as we speak.
Okay.
And when I took it in, the tech, he scanned the code and he said, Father, I've been doing this for 30 years, and you know which cars have which problems. And he goes, this car does not have transmission issues. And you're firing two different codes. He goes, but what these new cars do have are soy-based plastics that cover the wires underneath the car. And he said, rabbits in dealership lots enjoy snacking, nibbling, if you will.
Oh, yes.
On those wires.
Yeah.
And then he told me that it's not covered under warranty if a rabbit chews through your wires, because as he said, if you can find a GM parts number on a rabbit, we can turn it in for warranty. But if not, tough luck. So we are waiting to understand what's going on and what's funny. And I don't know if this is the case, but right behind our house at the cathedral, there is one individual rabbit that is kind of a outdoor favorite pet of the rector of the cathedral. And I'm wondering if that might be the culprit of my car's demise. We'll see. We'll find out. I might get a call in the midst of the episode here.
Well, I'm sorry. You know, this is a problem for anyone who parks outside. Cats, mice, rabbits, they can get up and they can crawl in and they can nibble on things within the underbelly of a car. Sometimes they live up in there, you know, and can die even.
Here's the problem, though. It's not just simply that they crawl up. It's that they're attracted to soy-based plastics.
Yeah.
That's not
bad
good.
Idea.
That's not great. So we'll see what
happens. Smelling the soy, huh?
We'll see what comes of it.
I'm sorry the car wiring was so deliciously attractive to these rabbits. I'm sorry.
Maybe we could flavor it with something less attractive. Black licorice or something would be a good alternative. I'll try to write into to the company there and see if they could do something about that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Good luck.
How's the Easter season over there at the seminary?
Easter season is good. Yeah, just lots of Easter joy here. We got a May crowning coming up in a couple of weeks with the seminarians, and they're all digging in right now as we're turning in final papers, and we've got two more weeks before exams. So guys are digging in, and it's a busy time of year, but Easter's great.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm sure you got the nice flowers blooming and stuff around.
Oh, yeah, the whole city is in bloom. It's just really shocking. Like, everything is green. And not just like buds, like full green flowers everywhere. I can't believe how
early
advanced
the spring comes. Right?
Yeah, it really does come early here. Daffodils were blooming maybe like 5 weeks ago, actually.
But don't worry, that means that good Missouri humidity is coming right around the corner.
It is. It's coming real soon.
Sneaking up on you. That's great.
That's right.
Yeah, we have the blossoms on the trees. I stopped by Trinity Heights the other day. Perfect. And the turkeys walking up the hill had these purple blossoms on the trees. It was awesome.
Good spring day. That's great.
That's awesome. Father Shane, we've talked about Father Giussani before in Communion Liberation.
Yes, and his Father Juice.
Don Juice, right. His kind of, not the first book that he wrote, but one of the more important books that he wrote is called The Religious Sense. Mm-hmm. And I thought, especially since you taught fundamental theology in the fall semester, this stuff would be on your mind. But kind of in the middle of the text right now as this small group works through this book together. And the conclusion of this chapter 5, that's called The Nature of the Religious Sense. So folks at home, this might sound a little philosophical, but just stay with us. You can always back it up. You can slow it down, you know, and you can speed up or slow down the podcast. You can slow it down so it's like slow motion, you know. But here's why I want to dive into this, Father Shane, is kind of halfway through the book, as Father Giussani is trying to make a point that humans have in our nature, in our like constitution, that which we're made up of, this space within us, within our interior life, that has an openness to God, right? That there's this natural space that we can come to understand this religious sense that we're actually longing for something more.
Mm-hmm.
Why I want to dig into this right now is that always coming back to this topic of those who feel outcast. You know, I think we feel it in ourselves day to day, those little doubts that kind of creep in. You know, I always joke, it's like when you wake up from sleep and you're kind of like, do I believe in God? And then you wake up fully and take a shower and you're fine, you know? Mm-hmm. But there's those little thoughts, you know? Or as the world, as the communities that we live in, our culture becomes more and more secular. We watch our friends, we watch our family members more or less live the same lives, but maybe without faith. And it might seem like, man, it seems easier over there when I'm having these doubts over here. Maybe it'd just be easier to give in to these doubts, right? So I want to dive into this brief paragraph here because I think it just gets to the heart of the fact that we can't avoid the fundamental questions that are in our minds and in our hearts all the time. We can try to distract ourselves from them. Our culture does that. Secular society does that. We can never fully avoid them. And the more we kind of push them away, actually the more difficult our life gets, not easier. Mm-hmm. Right? And so just to kind of offer some encouragement for those experiencing that doubt when faced with the kind of cultural doubt, I want to read these words from Father Giussani. In the middle of the text, conclusion of chapter 5, he says, only the hypothesis of God, only the affirmation of the mystery, as a reality existing beyond our capacity to fathom entirely, only this hypothesis corresponds to our original structure. So he's talking about what we're made up of. If it is a human nature to search relentlessly for an answer, if the structure of a human being is then this irresistible and inexhaustible question, a plea, then one suppresses the question if one does not admit to the existence of an answer. But this answer cannot be anything but unfathomable. Only the existence of the mystery is adequate to our human structure. And then there's a fun word, mendicity, which is like mendicant, begging, which is mendicity, insatiable begging. And what corresponds to us is neither ourselves nor something we give to ourselves, measure, or possess. Those are a lot of words. I just want to read one sentence again. One suppresses the question if one does not admit to the existence of an answer. And then when he finishes there, that paragraph, what corresponds to us is neither ourselves nor something we give to ourselves, measure, or possess. So what he keeps pointing to throughout this text is that we always want something more. We're always searching for something more. We always have questions that are bigger than the answers we can find. We see that in children, but we see that in ourselves too, those who are in an academic pursuit or even those young people who doubt or question matters of the faith or the structures of society. There's always some horizon that we can't quite reach. There's always some beyond. And he just calls that mystery. And eventually he'll capitalize the M and recognize that God is that mystery, that thing we're grasping for, right? Then, of course, the Christian story is that God doesn't just stay out there on the edge of some horizon, but he breaks through and comes and meets us.
Mm-hmm.
But this idea of suppressing the question doesn't deal with the answer, right? So just pushing away the question doesn't actually offer any kind of resolution for our searching and our seeking. But then what he's saying is that we're made up of like a begging and a plea for something. And that's the space where God meets us. So that place where we doubt, that's actually like the exact place where we can find a desire for something more. That's the place where we can search for this answer, which is God who reveals himself to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to hear your thoughts on.
Yeah, I mean, what's coming to mind is Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning text, as you're kind of sharing a lot of these insights. And I loved how Father Giussani kind of put that. It's very succinct, but it's very beautiful. If you just presume that there is no answer, is that how he said it? I'll read it one more time.
So he's saying, like, the structure of human being is this irresistible and inexhaustible question, a plea. And then he says, so then, if one suppresses the question, if one does not admit to the existence of an answer. So, yeah, if you ignore the fact that we're made up of a question, one suppresses the question if one does not admit to the existence of an answer.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so for anyone who just says, well, we'll never know if there is a God out there, we'll never know if there's a meaning for one's life, we'll never know if there's actually eternity beyond the grave, we'll never know if there's actually meaning to any of this. If you just kind of cut yourself off at the knees there and presume that there is no answer, well then, number one, you're not living, you know, in the potential for truth, but number two, you've just crushed the whole exercise of man's searching. You know, and the questioning and the pondering and the curiosity. What does that say about our dignity just in the act of that curiosity and that searching? But then more to the point, in that curiosity, in that searching, as you pointed out earlier, that's where God can meet us, right? That's in the questioning, in the doubting, in the pondering, in the wonderment, all of that can be the space where God comes to encounter us. Which is really good, you know, as you have pointed out, and as we both experienced in our own pastoral ministry, some people come up to us and they really do a lot of self-loathing and they beat themselves up saying, I have so many doubts. Okay, fine. Some people, you know, struggle with the gift of faith. Others have put themselves in a position where they're not cooperating with the gifts of faith given to them through the graces of the sacrament very easily. But I think there are others who are just legitimately pondering and searching, and that might not be such a bad thing. That might not be worth beating yourself up over if that, in fact, is the sacred space by which your heart is acknowledging you want more, you want to go deeper, you want the Lord to encounter you there. And if the Lord, in a sense, is allowing that space to exist, and he's not just throwing cotton candy at you all day long with heavenly graces, but he's allowing the soul to deepen and to stretch and grow so that the encounter can be ever more deep and rich, that's precisely why he's allowing that, right? The exercise of man going deeper and deeper into the quest for truth and searching, you know, so that fulfillment, you know, might be his. That's precisely where I think God wants to meet us most deeply. So, you know, I think what you're saying is very accurate and it's so helpful in these times.
Mm-hmm. I was reading ahead. I haven't finished this book yet because the small group I'm in, we kind of work just a little section at a time. And try to compare it to our own lives and say, okay, if this is true, where have I found this to be true in my life this week? Where have I experienced this, you know, this thing, this reality? So that's the question that we ask ourselves. But just in the next chapter at the very beginning, he starts to point out these different ways that people suppress the question, this kind of these ultimate questions. Mm-hmm. What's the meaning of life? Who am I? Why am I here? These big questions, existential questions that people talk about when they have these, you know, they always say my existential crisis that they have or something. But he said the first thing that people do to suppress it is they just say that that's an absurd thing to ask. You should never ask questions like that. And that reminds me of one of my philosophy professors in college seminary. She said the reason she switched from studying theology in grad school to philosophy was that she realized that every theological issue, debate, heresy, had a philosophical issue underneath it, mm-hmm. the way people were thinking about reality. And she said the big question that always kept ringing in her kind of mind and her heart that kept her engaged in philosophy, so it wasn't this just kind of dry studying of history or just, you know, writing lots of words for nothing, was this, you know, fundamental question, why is there something rather than nothing?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember different people in my life who were kind of in a certain spot of questioning or kind of adherence to a certain atheism or agnosticism. When I would pose that question, it was met with exactly what Father Giussani's talking about, this complete rejection. Like, that's the dumbest thing in the world to even say. Like, why would you possibly ask a question that there couldn't be an answer for?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't answer that. There's no way you can possibly answer that. So why even ask that? And he's in the next chapter, he's just pointing out that's part of that suppression of the question.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this awareness. And I think this is what's so helpful for us Christians is to say, we can say one and the same time that God, while he's not comprehensible, that we can't fully like wrap our arms around him, right? I think it was Augustine who said, like, if it is comprehensible, then it's not God.
Mm-hmm.
And then there, when Jasani was using some of that language that the Eastern Christians will use, infathomable, you know, ineffable, it's this recognition that it's the Christian paradox that I can know God who has revealed himself to me within the kind of construction of my own human nature and from divine revelation, from scripture, from church history, in the sacramental life of the church, in this life of grace and prayer, while not fully comprehending him. But the struggle is for young people today, especially in our kind of technocratic world, especially that last paragraph or that last sentence where it said that what corresponds to us is neither ourselves nor something we give to ourselves, measure, or possess, right? Unfortunately, today with our young people, and I feel it in myself sometimes, because we're encouraged to, one, just like live like a self-made life. You know, you can do whatever you want, right? All the kids right now are trying to decide what college they want to go to, and it's kind of interesting to watch. That campus just didn't feel right, you know? And they're talking about it because they're trying to have the perfect space where they can make, you know, their perfect life, mm-hmm. where they can figure this all out. And in so many other ways, in the way that we educate, the way that we learn, the idea is you take a thing, you break it down into its parts, you know, like a sentence or like a, you know, body of an animal in a, you know, a lab in biology. You take the thing apart in its pieces, you understand all the pieces, you can put it back together in its totality, and you can understand it, you know. And even the cosmos that we can't quite fully understand, we have all of these mathematical equations where we can sort of still try to wrap our arms around it, right? And so it's helpful just to see that, no, the Christian paradox is that while we can't comprehend, while we can't fully grasp the ineffable God, he has still revealed himself to us, and we still have access to a certainty or a certain confidence and belief in him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Father Jasani points out that it's really disingenuous to kind of say, well, you can't ask the question because there's no reason to find, there's no way to find an answer. But yet, you know, so he's arguing that on a philosophical, but also on a spiritual ground. But I think we do need to acknowledge how many people actually don't want to ask the questions because they're actually not that interested or perhaps even fearful of what the answer will be. You know, if you're absolutely convinced that there is an answer for whether there's a God, whether he's revealed himself, whether he saved us from sin and death, whether there's an afterlife, if you're really interested in that answer, well, of course, you're going to want to bait the question and then tease it out even further. But I'm sure Father Jasani was responding to so many people that we still see around in our culture today who say, I actually don't want the answer, and therefore I want to ignore the question, and I will attack anyone who tries to pose the question. Because in my own self-referential universe in which I'm the center of the world, that answer actually is going to have to force me to re-examine my life, my existence, and my meaning. And so if I just stay in my own little condensed shell and I can create my own little conceived world, well, of course, I'm not going to want to ask these deeper questions because I don't want to have to deal with the ramifications of the answers.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see why Father Jasani was leaning into this. And highlighting this because it does impact the work of evangelization, and it just impacts the work of philosophy as people are asking the deeper questions about life. But those who aren't interested in the questions at all because they're terrified of the answer, that hasn't gone away, has it?
No. And, you know, this work that we do in our small group called School of Community, where we go over his text, this idea is to say, well, how did I see this to be true in my life? And maybe I want to share an example that came up just the other day. And this, it just rings so true, especially this, you know, when you suppress the question, if one does not admit to the existence of an answer. I live like this sometimes, but I encountered this just out and about. I like Mardo. It's a pizza place here in Sioux City, I'm talking about a lot of pizza in this episode, but they have these just nice little slider burgers They're really delicious, okay. And they're kind of small. They just hit the spot, right?
Okay.
I was coming back from like back-to-back meetings, and I'm like, you know what? What's nice is they have it's a restaurant and a brewery, but there's a bar where you can sit at. So it's not as weird as sitting at a table by yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of be up there, and there's some people around, and it's great. There's a lot of healing families that'll come through there. So I swung by for these slider burgers. And these young women, probably a little bit older than me, maybe 30, 35, they kind of sat down, like down the bar a little bit. And just through their conversation, what was really clear was they're more or less just talking about all the kind of hookups they've had recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt very uncomfortable, and I left once I was, you know, finished eating because it was uncomfortable. What was uncomfortable was just kind of how casual they were speaking of just these, you know, kind of different guys that they had met up with, hooked up with, whatever. And as they talked about it, this was just kind of ringing in my mind of like, do you realize that there's like there's something more, like that the question that's being asked in like every one of these hookups, every one of these guys. And I think it was a Chesterton who said, like, the man who knocks on the brothel door is seeking God,
mm-hmm.
like in those questions. But to reject that there is some answer beyond just what I can try to like fill up right now, to mm-hmm. reject that is kind of even suppressing the real question itself, you know? So, and we all do that in different ways. It's not just to kind of accuse these young women. It made me sad to realize mm-hmm. that, oh, like you actually suppress a deeper question in you when you try to satisfy it with this kind of life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think back to the beginning of the episode, the reason I wanted to bring this up was when we're encountered by such a secular society that in some ways, you know, this post-Christian societies we've talked about from these different books that have come out from Religion of the Day, as we talked about recently, that a secular culture that kind of rejects anything beyond, rejects that which is mystery, rejects that which is outside of myself. It mm-hmm. just says, no, I can possess the answer. I can find the answer in myself. But we always find that that's not enough. That's not enough, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, and you could tell, they were like, oh, this guy was so sweet and he called back and that was so nice. Anyways, here's the next guy. And I'm like, oh, man, like mm-hmm. just that kind of rejection of, yeah, a deeper question, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe someone hasn't helped those women or countless others really live life on a level of asking the deep questions, going to the next level, really pondering the deeper meaning. And there can be a sadness that would reside in your heart if they think, well, just chasing the next thrill or the next adrenaline rush is all there is in this world. And that becomes a very pleasure-seeking existence. If that's all they know, how much more important is the work of evangelization to say, do you want something more than that? Does your heart ache for something that has more meaning and more significance than that? And if so, just in pondering the question and seeking that response can open the door where God, you know, can meet someone. So thanks for sharing those reflections today on Father Jasani. It's good to unpack some of that and appreciate the insights. Thank you.
Thanks, Father Shane. We'll just keep seeking that true answer, which is God. God bless.
Thanks for tuning in. Send your questions and comments to outcastcatholic@gmail.com. Catch you next time, and God bless.